Right, so there's not much from the first slide anyway, other than who I am, so I will get going. As you've already heard from Ian and Justin, they've had busy years, and I've had a very busy year in 2018. So I stood here last year saying that there was a lot to be done. There is still a lot to be done, but there has been a lot done as well. But I've already published my annual report, which went out in February, which has the detail of everything I'm going to talk about tonight. So I'm just going to do a brief summary of some of the key issues of interest. The first success has to be the fact that I have a website in which this has all been published. It's now a year old, and it's growing all the time with different information about what I've been up to. So if you've not looked at it, please do. The focus areas I laid out in 2018 of if we can get things moving in each of these areas over the next few years, then we will get a regulatory framework that is going to start making some differences. So that's establishing operational independence, consumer protections, effectively monitoring SURE, and the wider regulatory initiatives. And that's the web address, if you didn't already know. So, since...
It works.
The other thing that was a very important start to 2018 was getting the first budget for regulation. There was budget previously that sat with other departments, but since middle of 2018, communications regulation now has a dedicated budget, and we're now going through the process for 2019 to 20. That in itself has taken a lot of time, scoping out what was needed and what will be needed, and so hopefully moving forward, that gives a good basis on which to undertake activities. And it also enabled me to start working with some technical consultants, and I've got Insight Consulting, who are here in the back of the room today with us over this week, who have been providing me invaluable independent advice, particularly on KPI measurements from the information I've been provided with from SURE. We've been looking at issues such as the price cap compliance in the last couple of years, but also looking at legislative amendment that is likely to be required in the next couple of years. Some of that I've introduced through the Spectrum Management Framework consultation, which is also currently live. But I'll just look at a few more things as we go. Oh no, sorry, not that one yet. And I think I said last year, and I'm going to keep saying it, that the role of the regulator is quite specific. And I think some of the time there can be some misunderstanding of what I'm actually here to do. So my role is to confirm that SURE is operating in the best interests of the consumer, but I also have to provide a stable regulatory environment in which SURE operates. And that in turn encourages investment in the infrastructure. So the more stable the regulatory environment, the better that is for everyone. And at the moment, that's still developing. And I appreciate there's been quite a lot of frustration, I think, from people who want to be able to complain directly to me. But as I've tried to say at other times, the regulator isn't the complaints manager for SURE. But what I am doing is making sure that there's a complaints process in place that works for customers, and I'm checking that it's being operated properly by SURE. But there is then also the availability for anyone who wants to escalate their complaint to then come to the regulator. So in 2018, I put a process in place whereby SURE now have to report complaints data on a quarterly basis. I've had several months of that now, so I hope in the next few weeks to be publishing the data that is available on complaints. So that's looking at the number SURE get in each quarter, how many get escalated from stage 1 to stage 2, and then how many come on to the regulator. I'll also be looking at how many complaints aren't responded to in the specified timescales, but also whether it's reasonable to expect 100% of complaints to be dealt with in those times, and what to do about the ones that aren't. Because at the moment within the Code of Practice, there are the timescales from which complaints should be dealt with, but there isn't anything to address if complaints aren't dealt within those times. And in different jurisdictions, they go through different routes, whether you look at a line of percentage, say 90 or 95% of complaints, but then what do you do about the 5% that don't meet those timeframes? But these are all things that now we're getting the data, I'm going to be having those conversations with Shaw this year about how we address that. So that's part of the journey of the regulatory process. Then following on from complaints, you've got fault response times. So again, within the Shaw Code of Practice, there's the response times for faults. Again, I don't have any data on that. So over the end, towards the end of 2018, I requested from Shaw a certain amount of data on faults. So I've had that first from quarter four in 2018. I've got that data that I got a few weeks ago. And after I looked at it, I then realised I possibly hadn't asked the right questions in the first place, because some of the data, we've got the data on how many faults have been logged by customers, but not the data, because I didn't ask the question, on how many of those were actually faults and then fixed. So we're now looking at that again, and so in the next quarter, the data will be even more informative, at which point I'll be able to start publishing it. So then, by the middle of this year, we'll be having data in the public domain on both complaints and faults, at which point, again, I can start considering what to do about faults that don't meet the response times, because we have a basis of data on which to work. Again, I accept this probably seems frustratingly slow, but we have gone from having nothing in place, and to get anything in place, and to set targets, you really do need a sound evidence base, because that gives the stable regulatory environment on which Shaw can work in. So that's the basis on which I'm working. Then we move on to quality of service. So in August 2018, I submitted a report to Shaw, written in collaboration with Insight, which proposed a framework for measuring quality of service. These proposals contained a variety of different proposals that would be of importance to customers. But most importantly, they were defined, measurable, and objective. There's hundreds of different performance indicators, which David from Insight helpfully gave me a big list of, and it's not reasonable to implement every single one of them. So the proposals looked at primarily the quality of service indicators for mobile and broadband. They're indicators that are generally accepted with the industry. They're also not disproportionately expensive to implement, because that will have a knock-on effect on consumers. They also meet the principles from the International Telecoms Union to give consumers confidence that they're not just made up. And Shaw, I have to say, received them very positively. They actually took them away and looked out to make them harder for themselves. And we then looked at how we measure these. And again, I was looking at external providers of providing equipment to monitor quality of service. But actually, in the timescales I'm wanting to get these things done, there isn't anything that works for the Falklands that is of the right scalable nature. So Shaw are actually working on a probe that they can get onto their network. The first test probe should hopefully go in April, at which point I'll be given the generated results. We'll then look at that and then roll out further probes across the network to cover a representative sector of the network, so both the rural network and in Stanley. Before that happens, I'm going to be coming out with much more public information once we've got the initial test probes out there, letting everyone know exactly what we're measuring, how I'm verifying the reliability of that, and again, independent expertise is going to come in on this. So hopefully by the end of this year, we will be measuring quality of service in a way that hasn't been measured before. Once that evidence base has been developed, I'll then be looking at working with Shaw for setting the targets on meeting those levels on a consistent basis. But we can't set those targets and any penalties, which comes later on, until we get that evidence collected. So it is underway. 2018 was the year where we've spent a lot of time asking the questions, making sure they're the right questions, and now we're trying to get the solutions in place to get regulation up and running. That's addressing mobile and broadband. Going back to what Justin was saying in some of the questions about issues with particularly the camp network, for landline telephone, the license says that there has to be proper and effective provision of landline. The question is, how do you define proper and effective? Because I could probably ask every one of you in this room and come out with a different answer. So there has to be a piece of work on producing clear guidelines from the regulator of what is proper and effective so that customers know what they should be expecting and Shaw are also signed up to those. So again, that's another piece of work that is going to be looked at this year to give increased consumer information on from the regulatory perspective. And that's also partly why we took some of our consultants and people out to the camp network today to get a better understanding of it. In 2018, quite a lot of my work as well was looking at the mobile network. There's a series of KPIs within the Shaw license. For example, one of them is that there needs to be local maps put out on coverage. Well, since April 2018, I've been having meetings with Shaw about what these maps might look like. It might sound simple, but without the detailed mapping of the Falklands, providing a map that is useful to customers actually takes a bit longer than it might look like in the way the KPI has been written. So with each of these KPIs, as we've come across them, it's been new for all of us, and it just takes that bit more time than I think any of us may have envisaged. I've also seen the drive testing data. I've seen how it works. We've actually done some of it today as well so that the MLAs can see what I've been seeing. And I've been seeing detailed coverage projections from the different areas of the network. So the data that Shaw have on their network, they've been sharing it with me, and I'm going to be going through a process of just verifying all of that before the KPI then gets formally reported on. But again, that will all come out in the public domain. So in summary, that is the slide on the next steps, which I've already said. Right. So the regulatory process. So in 2018, and a lot of it, we've been agreeing the parameters, the type of data, the purpose and frequency. We're now going through the data collection phases, getting the right systems in place, because some of the questions I've been asking, Shaw don't collect the data in, they've never been asked to collect it before, so they're now having to put those systems in place. I'm then going to be assessing the data over time, identifying trends, are things getting better, are things getting worse, and then setting the compliance targets. So we're very much in this phase, beginning to move into this phase. One of the things that has been said internationally about the establishing of regulation when it was widely being done in the 1980s to early 1990s, and there's quite a lot of research evidence for this, is that the biggest surprise to everyone when it came to privatisation was how long it took to set up regulation. And on average, 5 years is what you're looking at. We're into the beginning of the second full year. So, yes, it is slow, but in the end, hopefully, that means we get it right. Another area, as I've already alluded to, in 2018, I worked with Plumb to do an audit of Spectrum and to put together proposals and recommendations for a spectrum management framework. which is one of the requirements of the regulator in the communications ordinance. So I might have some of you saying, why spend your time doing this? There's all the other regulatory activities you should be doing. But actually, spectrum management is one of the building blocks of communications. So we need to make sure it's managed properly, but also so it's there to be used by people who are using it, and it's clear to everyone who wants to use it how to do that. So that consultation was published on the 26th of February. It's available online, or you can request copies from me. The deadline is the 5th of April, but that's not the end of the conversation. I'll be looking at the responses received, continuing the conversation with different spectrum users, and then looking at any legislative amendment that's required to support effective spectrum management in the Falklands. Finally, I just wanted to introduce the concept of the Communications Week and why it's needed. Ian's already, and Justin, demonstrated why we're needing to do this. We all know about the issues we have with international connectivity, and we need to get it right, and we need to get it right now. So this week is aimed at getting everyone talking, getting a really good understanding of what's being used, what the constraints and difficulties are, but what the visions are from across the economy of what needs to be done, and get that encapsulated in a broadband strategy that we can all use to plan our future technology developments. Regulation isn't the answer to some of the issues that consumers have. Connectivity is. And that's why I think it's essential that as regulator I lead this, get everyone together and make it happen. So I'm an optimist. I think this is a good thing to be doing. And if it doesn't work, then we'll go back to basics and I'll leave out the exit over there. But also it's highlighting that the solutions aren't just responsibility of Shaw. It's for all of us to engage in this to get the solutions that are right for ourselves. So I want to encourage everyone to take part in the user habit survey, which is online for households. We need to know how consumers are using it. You can't model a network based on the most data intensive applications. You need to model it on the normal. But we also need to know what those intensive activities also are. If anyone doesn't want to use their data to do the survey, then I'll be here on Friday afternoon and you can come along, and Justin said he's going to give us some connectivity to do it. I'll just remind him of that. And you can come along and we can do it here with you.
4G.
Yeah. So the sector sessions and the household survey together is going to be part of the solution. Stand up for any questions or sit down?
Well, no, I think...
Shall I sit down?
Do you want to sit down? If anyone, any questions? I'd like to thank Ian, Justin and Susanna for their presentations. And just anyone, any questions, please? You know. Mario.
Good evening. Susanna, one question on your last bit, on the last couple of pages of your presentation, to do with the spectrum management. This is totally out of the commercial side. I'm a very keen and passionate radio amateur.
Yes.
And I notice on your proposal you have for the Falklands, than before we were part of the whole region, you actually deleted or done away with about 60% or more of the radio amateur frequencies and bands. What was the purpose of this and what's behind it?
So I want to reassure that the intention of the spectrum management consultation is to put into order what is already being done. So if there is anything in that consultation that is missing, please let me know and add it back in. There isn't an intention to take anything away that is working and being done. It's a matter of trying to consolidate the fact that what the audit showed up is, whilst we're in Region 2, there is an extensive amount of Region 1 use. So I'm looking at trying to use both, and if some of the amateur frequencies haven't been included, please do let me know. It's not the intention to take anything away. Like I say, the consultation is very much the beginning of the conversation rather than the end of it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I thought it may have been a
So a write it down and let me know, yes.
Behind. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I did have one question that was Bill Paul Evans was asking about the broadcasting of FM frequencies, why it's on even numbers and not odd, because apparently Discovery vehicles with their new radios can't receive even frequencies that they can receive odd. Well, one way around or the other. I don't know, but and anyway.
Well, I think we, between us, said we don't actually know the answer, but Mario might know.
Yes, yes. It's not an issue of the frequencies. It's an issue particularly to one manufacturer of vehicles.
Yes.
That's
well, I know, but I think as there will be.
So, it's the latest version, the last 5 year version of Land Rover that fitted a certain audio console with the radio on that. And basically, the software they fitted was for another country, not for the Falklands. Mm. And that's been addressed several months ago. And the FIC garage is actually, every time a vehicle comes into service, it's automatically upgraded to all the frequencies.
The answer. Fantastic.
But the only official the only vehicle of a radio manufacturer or right. type of vehicle is actually not an issue.
Thank you very much.
The Land Rover agents are taking their responsibility seriously.
Yeah. Anyone else? No.
Yeah, I'll ask one.
Oh,
I had a bunch, but I'll try. Sorry I missed the first half hour, I do apologise. I've seen in a couple of the presentations there was some discussion about finding out what the country needs, and I guess we have to go through that process again. We have done it a couple of times now. But kind of more of a concern to me is the statements that say we might have too much, would we use it all, and you know, what would we use it all on? And I would kind of expect, and it's kind of an open question really, does anybody know anywhere in the world where they say they've got too much, too fast internet? I don't think that's been achieved. And if it is, I would say that you all work for many.
I think I can answer this one. It depends how much you want to pay.
It's this which I skipped over.
Yeah.
But the issue is with any of the connectivity we've got here, it comes at a cost. And we can justify that cost if we know we're going to use it. So for FIG to be convinced that they may need to input money, for example, we need the evidence to do it, so we need this conversation.
Sure. Okay, but maybe I'll put it slightly differently then. For every investment that's been made in the last 20 plus years, we have capped it out and overused it and paid for it every time.
Yes.
So I think it's a pretty defined state that whatever we buy, unless you're going in a massive quantum leap.
Well, I think that's the point, is there's a number of technologies where you have to take the quantum leap, but there's a massive price tag attached to that. So you can take the leap, but you know, do you pass that cost on to consumers? It's quite a leap as well. I mean, Ian touched on, we can't go into the details, but you're effectively buying very large pieces of capacity and you're making that commitment up front. So as you part, the discussion is how you pass that cost through to customers. Ultimately, we've got 1,800 broadband customers. If we divide that number by 1,800, everyone's going to have to pay an awful lot more than they're currently paying for services. So there is this trade, exactly as that slide shows, actually. I completely agree, people will use whatever you put there, it's about the affordability for the country.
I just wanted to bring up, because it kind of fits with what Andrew said regarding the household survey, and I know when Susanna's been to the chamber we've discussed this. And the difficulty is when you're trying to, because what you're trying to do is come up with a strategy of where we will be in 3, 5, however many years. And you're wanting people to look at what they're currently doing, but their behaviours have already been influenced by the current existing system. It's very difficult for any of us to say, if I live my life running my business on the cloud, and all my children live on the cloud for education, exactly how much data we would all be using. I can't answer that question. And I'm very, very concerned that your survey is going to give very skewed information because it has been impacted by the controls that we exert ourselves over our own behaviours in order to live within a cost. The second point I wanted to add on, though, about sharing the cost between 1,800 people, I think this is where you look at national things. We have a 90%+ subsidised ferry and fly gas service. What about telecommunications, if that's what it takes to revolutionise this country and take us into the next
I think the thing is, the scale of the cost, it depends where you want to go on that.
I know, appreciate it.
I don't think there's any argument that everybody wants to see a big step forwards. But it's, you know, how big do we need to go? That needs to be defined.
And I take your point about the user habit survey, but we have to start somewhere. And what I'm interested in knowing is, if you were to talk to everyone in the West Store, everyone is gaming. But I don't suspect every household necessarily is a hardcore gamer. So you shouldn't map a system based on the very, very highest users. The other issue is, now I lost my train of thought, there are some free text boxes. And what we're really looking at understanding is those people who are moderating their behaviour, because actually some of the initial responses are people saying, I can do everything I want to do. And we might not believe that's the case, but that is what some of the submissions say.
Have they ever lived anywhere outside the Four Points?
But that's the thing. In those free text boxes, please say that you've modified your behaviour, and that's what we're taking into account. But on the simplest level, we don't know how many devices people are using or not using.
Well, the census will give you the devices information because it was in the last census. So with that, you can then...
But that's already out of date. So that's why we're doing it again now.
Yeah. But people do have to modify their behaviour when they come back here.
Yes. No.
Because if you're in a country that's got unlimited, you haven't got to.
And we're wanting to know how people are modifying their behaviours. That's the other issue. Because people are modifying them in different ways. So it might seem not useful, but it is genuinely information that we're going to take away and use to quantify what we need to do next.
Thank you very much for your answer. I think it's very helpful, certainly for this forum. But could I suggest that that kind of rationale is added to the wider public? Because as Andrew is saying, we have a lot of people that I'm sure maybe know these as much as the rest of us, that have only ever experienced Fort Knox internet and telecommunications widely. Yes, they go away on a holiday and get a great SIM card and there's bursts of this, that and the other, but you're talking about standard usage and what we might need. Businesses, we've sat in this room and discussed, we don't know because we've never had the ability to do it. Some of us who have international offices understand it, and there's quite a gap. I would say the same is for the home user, and of course, as businesses use internet more, they will influence how a home user does it.
Yeah.
So I'm very worried that, and I understand you've got to start somewhere, but the picture you're going to get is going to be greatly skewed because people are not going to understand really what you're trying to achieve. And I don't mean that to sound rude, but you've heard plenty of comment as to how people are not capable of giving you the answers you want.
And that's what we'll be viewing these results in the context of. We're not lifting it out of the Falklands. We understand that there is that approach that people take.
So then, just another question following Andrews. Are you focusing, I think, on the amount of devices that people have in the houses? But I think, to be honest, I think that's irrelevant because one can have 10 devices, but only a person will be using one at a time. So I think to concentrate on the amount of people, which is already known, basically using, I mean, in a household could be 3 people and 10 devices.
Yep.
10 devices won't be used. 3 devices will be maybe used at one time, but not the 10. So I think focusing on the amount of devices is not, I mean, people may have a half a dozen old phones or 3 computers and not used anymore. So I think it's the amount of people that are using the internet is actually more informative to what's required and actually the amount of devices, I think.
But I think there is also an issue that research has shown internationally that your amount of concurrent use in a household has an impact. So what one person in a household might be doing on one device, if you then multiply that across a family of five and everyone's got multiple devices and a smart TV, suddenly your speed and bandwidth has to be multiplied again and again, and that's what we're looking at. So those devices might not be being used now. We're wanting to look at, if every single device was turned on at the same time, what that load would be on the network. And we don't know how many devices are here. So it's, again, the start of that process.
I'm sure we'll be able to judge that by the amount of IP addresses being used at any one time.
I mean, that's only to your router. That doesn't include the devices on Wi-Fi, for example. You'd have 20 things on one IP address. Right. I mean, I think it's something we've certainly got experience of.
Jen, can I come back?
Yeah, he's my one of my
colleagues. The equipment in the household would be needed to be upgraded as well.
So people don't connect stuff.
You need about a router. You need a VDSL router that can do two channels.
I think
you need something. Yeah. You know, and that'd be another cost that's implemented as well, because you know these routers are not.
I think also, we have a view elsewhere in the world. We know exactly how the behaviours are happening in the markets where we do have unlimited services. I think ultimately, if it's net sure, we have to distribute the cost of whatever that service provision is. So, we're users here as well. We have an expectation. I travel a lot. I've had bad experiences elsewhere in the world that don't reflect what I get here. But if there was a cost-effective way of delivering more, and all the conversations this week will come back to the capacity, because the current infrastructure we've built, and I think what people... The survey thing is quite interesting, because the 4G is a good example where what people said 2, 3, 4 years ago about needing a 4G network and what the take-up's been locally are completely at odds.
Yeah, but to be fair, Justin, the system that was in before was not good. So, people were paying for it and it wasn't working.
But people said they needed 4G,
yeah,
and but they haven't actually signed up for it now. It's been here for 6 months, 7 months. Really low compared with...
Yeah.
So for 2G... To 4G, what percentage have moved? 50? More? Less?
I mean, 30% of our customer base are using 4G at the moment.
Yeah.
They've signed up for 4G. Okay.
Yeah. I know
one of our equivalent markets, 90%, yeah. 95%, if you look at channel arms.
Yeah.
So, a lot more than 30% of people said they wanted a 4G network 2 or 3 years ago. But the actual take-up's been very slow, and we're doing some work to look at
it. Well, I would say that is because it didn't work previously, the 2G, so people just got fed up with paying for something that didn't work, so therefore they weren't going to move and run the risk of the same thing happening again. So I think it's just a case of you talking to customers
and telling
them it works
really
well. It does actually work quite good the majority of the time.
Thank you.
Not all the time.
There we are.
Again.
Usually when I really need it, it doesn't.
I mean, again, we've actually patched the 4G network in the last few weeks as well, so I hope it all works better, not just the 2G.
Yeah.
I'm very conscious of running out of time.
Because I've not been here long enough to come at you with questions, but first of all, if I may just congratulate in initiating this this week for communications here, including the public. But can I also ask if radio local, on your local radio, probably it happens already, but whether you can go out on the radio and also try and promote, like 4G, like, completing the questionnaires that are here, and probably doing a question and answer interviews, that type of thing?
So
I'm just wondering whether that would...
Well, I was on the radio twice last week.
Okay.
For about half an hour at a time.
And the radio man's in the corner.
And it's being recorded.
So I'd just like to say thank you ever so much to Susanna, Justin and Ian. I hope you enjoyed the presentations, and thank you all very much for turning up, but also fill in your questionnaires. Communication is a two-way thing, so make sure you get back to people. So thank you very much.